Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And a texter makes a point here. Kaepernick intentionally sent a message by kneeling. It's not the same as everyone else doing whatever they're doing during the anthem. And actually, yeah, I would say it's a much more admirable act than going to get a beer, because going to get a beer is saying, nah, I don't care. And that's fine. I don't care about the national anthem, and I don't mind saying it.
But, guys,
but this guy chose the national anthem, an ode to what this country is about, to do a thing that this country is about, which is peacefully making your opinions felt on an issue that is important to you.
Although I find it disappointing, in retrospect, that he actually didn't go and get a beer during the anthem.
But guys, every week I see guys putting messages on their shoes, putting messages on their towels for whatever reasons. It could be for, you know, loved ones. It could be for whatever they want. Like, I don't understand how someone is offended by kneeling. It's actually the most respectful thing to do.
And that's why, like, I don't want to throw labels on a broad swath of people.
No, I agree with that.
However, when you bring up arguments like, I don't mind the message, I just don't like how he did it, whether you're doing it intentionally or not, I believe you are serving a racist purpose. Because what he did, as Joe has just pointed out, is respect the anthem more than the vast majority of people in the building.
Every week I see people disrespecting the anthem.
Yeah. And again, neither of us are saying anyone should have to respect the anthem. That's part of being an American. But
exactly,
the notion that what Kaepernick did was more disrespectful to the anthem than anything the vast majority of people are doing, I've never understood it. And if we're honest, I've never understood why we do the anthem in the first place, because I don't see what sports has to do with America. Let's go to Gordon.
They drape it in the flag.
I understand the PR avenues. I don't understand the actual connection. Gordon in San Jose. What do you got? Gordon, it's your turn. Gordon is gone. We gave Gordon his chance. We move on to Ryan in San Francisco. What's up, Ryan?
What's going on, fellas?
Nada.
Nada. So, honest, you all think Cap is good enough to play in the NFL? I know that 16 touchdown to 2 interception ratio, but if I'm not mistaken, he also had the Niners with the lowest amount of passing yards that we've had.
Well, I guess the question is, what does it mean to you to be good enough to play in the NFL? If, in your mind, good enough to play in the NFL means a top 15 quarterback, then no, I certainly don't think that's what Colin Kaepernick is. But the reality of who is actually playing in the NFL is that there's somewhere between 60 and 90 quarterbacks who are on rosters, and he's not one of them. And I definitely believe he's in the top 60 quarterbacks available.
I just watched Jeff Driskel play quarterback
exactly.
This weekend. Jeff Driskel.
I watch Mitchell Trubisky every week, and he is a starter.
No one's saying Kaepernick's the next Montana. We're just saying the guy can hold the clipboard and stand on the sideline.
At least.
The whole football argument is nonsense. I mean, it's because it's not about, is he better than Mitchell Trubisky? Because we don't know. Only because we haven't seen Kaepernick play in 3 years.
That's true.
Exactly.
He's not playing not because of his football acumen or lack thereof. He's not playing because the NFL's 32 owners said, we don't want you here because we have made up a scenario in which you're bad for our bottom line. We're punishing you for that and only that. It's not about whether he's a better quarterback than Jeff Driskel.
And a couple of texters have brought up the president, and I got to be honest, I don't think that's an issue here. This predated his presidency, and
no, but he used it. He very much used it as a political argument.
He has used it. I don't think his existence or position in office has affected the way the NFL has handled the situation. That's what I'm saying. Couple more calls before we move on to Giants baseball. Sal in Alameda, what do you got?
Hey, guys. So here's the thing. He started the cause when everybody else was already doing it once. It's not like he started anything. And what he actually initially stood for was completely not what it is now.
I'm sorry, Sal? Well,
yeah.
What do you mean? What are you saying he originally stood for, and how is it different from now?
Okay, so now he's saying that, oh, it's about the, you know, the kids and the police brutality. It wasn't really like that.
Yes, it was. That's exactly what he said it was from the very beginning, Sal.
Right, but I just want to get to a different point, if you don't mind.
But everything you just said wasn't true.
Okay, I just want to get past that point, sorry.
Okay.
The reason he actually started kneeling was because he became the backup.
That's, Sal, I'm sorry, you're just wrong. You're just wrong. And I don't know why you have that idea, but that's not accurate. He did not start kneeling because he became the backup. He started sitting for very specific political reasons that he outlined, and then he changed that to kneeling because he talked to Nate Boyer, a former NFL player and, I believe, Green Beret, who told him that would be a more respectful way to handle it, and because he legitimately was trying to be respectful. Let's go to Josh in Oakland. What's up, Josh?
Hey, how's it going, guys? I just wanted to talk about, I used to be in the military, and when you would hear colors or taps on base, you would see hordes of Marines just sprinting towards the barracks, trying not to stand, trying not to salute. Cap, you know, it's everybody else's opinion, and, you really, like you guys said, people sit in the stadium, they go get their food, they go get their beer. It's no disrespect. It's a free country. You got to do whatever you got to do, you know. And I just think it's all unfair. And I think he deserves a shot. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Josh. It's a nice, positive way to end the conversation.
Ray, he doesn't get a job this weekend. Let's say let's spin this thing forward. How does history remember this?
You mean this particular incident?
Yeah.
I mean, not just the Kaepernick thing, but this weekend.
This weekend as a whole,
as a transparent sham, because at this point, you brought in a guy under extraordinary and circumstances that are largely under duress, said, we want you to perform. And then, unless he's terrible, unless he can't hit a single receiver, unless he's a total disaster, if he doesn't get signed, what we will have learned is that the NFL ran a silly, stupid, and easy to expose game because they wanted to convince people who are easily convinced already of what they already wanted to believe. Mm-hmm. I mean, you heard the caller from Alameda, and with all due respect to him, he believes that this was about Kaepernick being unhappy with his position on the team. It's not only not true, it's aggressively not so when you look at the timeline, and yet people want to believe it because they want this to be a football story when in fact it's not. It just is not a football story. It never has been. If it was, a coach would have called him in for a tryout at some point to no fanfare at all, because this week 39 guys got called in for tryouts for one position or another. Only we're talking about this one because he's been prevented from that for 3 years just because the people who run the league didn't want it to happen.
Yeah, that's well said. I think we agree on that. And I think we can move on from our Colin Kaepernick discussion because we got a lot of other stuff to do today, for God's sakes. Alex Pavlovich, beat writer. Do we still call him a beat writer? Insider? I mean, I know he's a 95.7 The Game Giants insider. What
no
I'm saying is
are.
His other job, he's on NBC Sports. He's a man about the Giants.
He's a gas bag.
I'll let you take that up with him. I know you will. I quite enjoy Pav's content, and that is coming up in just a few minutes here. A lot to talk about. I don't know if people have heard. Madison Bumgarner has turned down his qualifying offer. Will Smith not only turned down his qualifying offer, but also has signed with the Atlanta Braves. He gone. And, of course, the big news of yesterday, Gabe Kapler, the new manager of the San Francisco Giants. Alex Pavlovich, 95.7 The Game Giants insider, joins us next to break it all down. And it's sponsored by Nutrisystem for Men. Lose weight eating the foods you'll love. Now save $50 plus get a week of protein pack shakes free at Nutrisystem.com/radio. Restrictions apply. Call or see website for details.
Now back to Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
We are back. Matt Kolsky, Ray Ratto, and Joe, the Butcher Boy Shasky, in for Damon Bruce, who is under the weather. We hope he's back soon. Hopefully he's feeling better today. I feel like he was starting to get under the weather Monday, Tuesday, real sick. I feel like by Thursday you're starting to come around. Maybe we'll see him tomorrow.
It's going around.
There
right
you
now.
Go, playing doctor.
Yeah, you're right. I shouldn't make any. This is like trying to speculate when Steph Curry comes back. We'll see him when we see him, folks.
He could have leprosy.
Dr. Kolsky.
Is that contagious?
Well, rub up against him when he comes back and find out.
Leprosy used to be a big problem, I know. I don't think it's too much of a concern these days.
I don't think so.
Well, like I said, give it a try.
You're right. I don't want it. I mean,
it's an Old Testament issue.
You know what I think of whenever someone mentions leprosy? We've gone very far afield very quickly here. But Ray, you might be able to guess this, actually. What jumps to my mind every time someone mentions leprosy?
Your junior year in high school?
That was a good guess, but no, Monty Python. There's an incredible leprosy scene in, I believe it is, The Life of Brian.
Oh, yeah. Life of Brian.
Right.
Thank you, Bruce. You know, every time you play a Bruce Bochy soundbite, Joe Spadoni, all I want to do is this.
I say he's an idiot. He's a competitor.
We'll never get rid of the sound bites. We may not have Bruce Bochy at the helm anymore of the San Francisco Giants, but the sound bites live forever.
I say he's an idiot.
Does Bruce Bochy come back and manage somewhere else?
Hold on. That's way too deep a question to get into right now. Right now, we have some news, first off. For those who have not heard, Will Smith and Madison Bumgarner were both given qualifying offers. For the record, if you don't know how this part of free agency works, a team can issue qualifying offers to the right kind of free agent, both Will Smith and Bumgarner being that type of free agent. And essentially the way it works is it's a market value, allegedly, one-year deal, and they can accept it, which very few guys do, or they can turn it down. If they turn it down, that means should they leave in free agency, you get some draft pick compensation. What has happened so far, Will Smith is gone to Atlanta, so the Giants will, I believe, get a draft pick out of that. Bumgarner, of course, not signed, but also chose not to sign the qualifying offer, which brings us to our guest, Alex Pavlovich, 95.7 The Game's Giant Insider. And, of course, you can catch his work at NBC Sports Bay Area, at Pavlovich NBCS on Twitter. And, Alex, we'll get to all the draft pick compensation and Madison Bumgarner's status in a second, but let's start with yesterday's big news. Gabe Kapler hired as manager. And I think the first question I have for you is, if everybody knew, and I think we all agree, everybody involved knew from Farhan down the line that yesterday was going to look a lot like it looked with answering for past transgressions, why was Gabe Kapler still the choice for manager?
Because Farhan believes he's going to be the best manager. I think that, you know, to me, that's ultimately what this comes down to. I mean, there was a lot yesterday, and that was something I've never really been a part of. I've been in a lot of press conferences. I've never really seen something like that before in what was supposed to be a really celebratory moment. But they knew that was going to happen, and they knew those questions were there. And look, the night before when they announced that he was going to be the manager, Farhan got on the phone with beat writers, and before he took any questions, he brought it up and gave his side of the story and how he felt about what happened in Los Angeles. I think you saw yesterday it was about 21 minutes before they got to the first question. And a big part of that was they both addressed what happened. So I think they didn't view it as a disqualifier. And once you get past that and you get into the process and try to figure out who the best manager is going to be, Farhan really felt that Gabe Kapler was going to be the best manager on the field for the San Francisco Giants, and that's why he made that move.
Is there a sense that he had to sell that internally? And I ask that because he could have hired Gabe Kapler at any point between the day after he was fired in Philadelphia to yesterday. So I guess I'm wondering, was the delay about resistance upstairs, or was this really Farhan's way of doing business, which is exhaustive and time-consuming tire kicking?
I think it was both. I mean, you know, I heard as of Monday that he was still trying to decide. And I think this is the guy he wanted, but he did understand the repercussions here. And I think on Monday he was still looking at Joe Espada, too, and wondering if that was the way to go. And I know some people at the Giants felt that way, and I'm sure that was part of this. I mean, I don't know if it delayed it by much, but part of the process for Gabe was talking to just about everybody in the organization. And that would be part of any managerial search, but I think there was a little bit more here. And certainly they talked to people in the community. They talked to experts in this field. I think there was probably a little bit more vetting, a little bit more work done with Gabe and Farhan to make sure that they, you know, had the right things or said what they wanted to say yesterday. I don't think it's delayed it by much, but I do think that was part of this. The other thing is, you know, they did have a general manager search going on at the same time. And I think one thing we realized, especially when they brought Scott Harrison, you could see just kind of the relief on Farhan's face to have that second guy and to have that other executive who's going to work side by side with him. And that is a lot of work. These interviews, I mean, Scott told me his first interview with Farhan was 5 hours in person. So these things last a long time. And if you have, you know, 9 to 10 managerial candidates, and I heard they talked to a lot of people for the GM job, that's just naturally going to take some time.
All right, so you brought up Scott Harris, and I wanted to go right there. How do I quantify who's making decisions on the roster? Last year we saw, you know, Farhan, he was back trading like every single day the last 2-3 spots of this roster, and I kind of was in love with that, to be honest with you. I'm curious, though. I mean, how does this organizational chart work? Like, what's the actual functionality on a day-to-day basis? Who does what?
Yeah, I think people need to, in general, stop looking at it as, like, you know, this guy is this guy's boss, and he is the other guy's boss, and there's 3 people underneath him and 4 people underneath that person. I mean, it is really now a situation where you get a ton of people in the room. And we noticed that last year at the winter meetings. I mean, it used to be a very small group that would meet with us or that would be in the suite when we went in there. And last year, right away, we walk in and there's probably 20 people sitting around a large table. And most of them have laptops. But, I mean, John Barr was there and Brian Sabian was there. And it really is. I mean, it's a buzzword and it's something they use, collaboration. We've heard it 100 times this week. But I think that's the strategy here. And we saw that in Los Angeles. It was Andrew Friedman and Farhan Zaidi. And we've seen that in Chicago. And, you know, Scott Harris, I talked to him for a while the other day, and he couldn't believe when he was a 25-year-old and he got hired by the Cubs that they put him right in the room with Theo and Jed Hoyer, and he was making decisions, and he was part of the decision-making process. So I think a lot of that is going to happen. You know, ultimately, Farhan Zaidi is the guy here. He's the guy who is going to get the credit. He's the guy who is going to take the fall if this doesn't work out. But the rest of these guys are going to be in the room. And I think that was the case last year, too. I mean, they used 64 guys. And, you know, we don't know which ones were exactly connected to who. But I'm sure some of those guys were players that were not on Farhan's radar necessarily, that maybe an analytics guy or a scout or you know, Jeremy Shelley or somebody like that had interest in and they brought in.
So overall, and Alex Pavlovich, our guest, 95.7 The Game Giants insider, and of course you'll find him on NBC Sports Bay Area, it's a collaboration, great, exciting. My concern is more, what's the plan here? And not specifically, but broadly. You have a new manager. You have a team that for the first time in a while has a couple of appealing young pieces on the way. When they say they intend to compete, of course they're going to say that. But is this really going to be an offseason where you try to reload the deck to sneak back in a wild card? Or do we start to see this team perhaps dismantle some of the talent we've become used to and go a little younger and fresher?
Well, I think you have to go to the language. And, you know, Farhan has never said he's competing for a championship right now.
Okay.
He has said we're trying to compete as long into the season as we can. And he said that last year. He said it again yesterday, which is a way of, you know, telling you, I mean, this is going to be a little bit of a rebuild without coming out and saying it's going to be a rebuild. And I've said that for a year, and I'll say the same thing now. And I think the fact that they hired Gabe Kapler, who really made his reputation on what he did with minor leaguers in Los Angeles, and not the incident there or anything like that, but just the work he did to help overhaul that minor league system, that tells you a lot about where they're headed. And they felt he was the best guy, I think, for young players. Certainly they feel he can get the most out of the existing roster, but they feel he's the guy who can bring in a Joey Bart, who can bring in an Elliot Ramos and put those guys in the right situation. So I think that's the direction they're headed. I mean, this is from the ground up. They really had a ton of work to do, and the payroll is still – they have a lot of money to spend, I think, if they want to, but, I mean, they still have some bad contracts there. So there's still a lot of work to do, and I think we'll see a pretty similar season from a transaction point to what we saw last year. Now, the only thing that could change that is that I do think there was so much bad publicity around this that they probably are a little bit eager to speed up the process here, and certainly there's more of a spotlight on them, and I think Farhan understands that probably, and I think Gabe probably saw that the last couple of days. That, yeah, it's not great right now. The fans are not happy. It's a group that's upset, and we saw that last year from season ticket sales and from ticket sales in general, and I think we've seen that on social media the last 2 days. So maybe at some point they decide to spend a little bit more money than they first planned and accelerate this a little bit. But in general, I think we still have to view this as a little bit of a rebuild.
Couple of questions. First of all, is Farhan disappointed that he couldn't get a general manager who was younger than Scott Harris?
I think they interviewed a 30-year-old and probably somebody younger than that. So, yeah, but Scott's very young.
What's the magic of him that basically elevated him to what is at least by virtue of title a job that goes to people who are normally 15-plus years older?
Yeah, you know, it's hard with executives, I think, to point to the magic. And I asked Scott the other day, I sat with him and said, is there like a move or is there, you know, a trade or something that your fingerprints are really on? And I asked some people around the game, too, who knew him. And it's just so hard these days because, like you said, I mean, or like I said a couple minutes ago, I mean, it's so collaborative. It's hard to point to one thing he did and say, that's what this guy did. That's why he got this job. But I think just the reputation, you know, everything I've heard about him, it's just the work ethic is off the charts. The curiosity, the baseball intelligence is off the charts. And this is what you hear from people around the game. I mean, I got a couple texts from friends in other front offices after they made that move and said he is a really, really good hire. And I also think Scott talked a lot about culture. And if you guys get a chance to meet him and sit with him, he's somebody who I think is just very easygoing and somebody who I think will fit very well with the clubhouse, will fit very well in any minor league clubhouse he goes into. And really, I think as they're trying to make this a place where you win, but also a place where they have a little bit more fun and it's a little bit more energetic. And I think in recent years, we've turned, you know, to incoming players. I mean, you look at a Steven Vogt and say, yeah, he brought some energy to the clubhouse, but I think the whole organization needs more energy and that's what Scott's going to bring.
Yeah.
I just want to ask him real quick. Bumgarner is largely just a pro forma move today, right? I mean, he had to do it just for procedural reasons.
Yeah, he just had a deadline today, but I mean, he could have done this. He could have told you this 6 months ago.
Well, what do you think they do with Bumgarner? Are they going to try to re-sign this guy? And does that have any bearing one way or the other on the rest of their free agency?
It's hard to tell. I mean, I think as you guys have seen from Farhan the last year, he does not like to let these things out there, and it's something where they're going to operate in the shadows for the most part, and really it is hard to tell how they truly feel. I mean, they will say they're going to make an honest effort. Everything I've gathered just from talking to people in the organization is that there's not really an expectation, whether it's in the front office, whether it's from teammates in the clubhouse, that he will be back. But you never know. I mean, he's going to go out there and try to find the best offer, and I think it's a positive sign for free agents, what we saw from Will Smith today, that somebody was able to do it quickly. And maybe Madison goes out there and finds somebody who gives him a deal that he deems acceptable and does it quickly. Maybe he's sitting there on December 15th and he circles back to the Giants and says, hey, let's talk. So I think it's hard to tell. I think they'll stay open-minded. They understand what he means. And look, there is a PR aspect to this, and we've seen that the last couple of days. And I know they're not going to spend a lot of money based on that, but if push comes to shove, if an extra $5 million brings Madison Bumgarner back, and that's the story of your offseason instead of everything else, you know, that becomes intriguing.
Alex, what's going on with that center field fence? Because I had a little birdie chirp in my ear during the regular season, and they kind of gave me the outline of what it was going to look like in center field.
Was the birdie Kruko, and was the the ear national television?
No. Okay. But right, I did hear that, sure. too. This was before that. And I kind of had an idea of how they were going to cut that outfield wall just a little bit. It wasn't going to be very drastic. Have you gotten any designs? Do you have any idea as far as what the dimensions are going to be like with this new bullpen out in center field? And did you like Top Golf?
Oh yeah. I love Top Golf. That's an easy answer.
First things first here.
Doesn't it feel like you're going to fall off those? Doesn't it feel like you're going to fall off those ramps that they have for Top Golf? Though you get a little weird when you're swinging that club on there, doesn't it?
Yeah, this is maybe something I shouldn't admit publicly, but when I go play actual Top Golf, I prefer to be on the bottom level, just because you're actually taking a real swing.
I'm with you.
Agreed.
Yeah. So it was a little bit weird. My swing was not what it usually is the other night. You don't really want to get your legs into it when you're that high. But it's fun. But as far as the dimensions, you know, they've cut out a lot of right center field, but they've cut out a lot from the bleachers. And I talked to some people yesterday, and I've seen it twice now or three times, and taken a look at kind of the development over the last week. And you're going to see the bullpens out there in right center, but it's not going to be a huge change to the dimensions of the ballpark. I think right center is probably going to be somewhere around 410, 420, or 412 maybe, instead of 421. They're still trying to figure out. I mean, ultimately, you're talking about a pretty big construction project out there, and so they're not sure of the exact measure there when they're done. But it's not going to be like it's going to be a small ballpark out there. It's still going to be pretty massive, and it's still going to play big, especially at night. And I think the change you'll see is going to be very minor. And there's going to be a little bit of a change in center field that'll bring the wall in just a little bit as they cut that triples alley off a little bit. But it's still going to be a pitcher's park.
Alex Pavlovich, our guest, a 95.7 The Game Giants insider. And I am curious quickly before we let you go, Will Smith out the door. Do we know what the compensation is as far as level of draft pick? And if Bumgarner were to leave, what would that be? Do we know that?
Yeah, in classic Major League Baseball form, it's very complicated. So it's called like after competitive balance round B, but before the third round, which doesn't really make sense.
Okay.
But it is essentially, it's going to be somewhere in the late 70s, somewhere around the 80th pick, maybe a little bit better than that, maybe a little bit worse.
So not bad.
It depends on what happens with team payroll and where other guys sign and how much they sign for. But yeah, it's going to be, you know, if Bumgarner signs elsewhere as well, I mean, that's adding two picks in the top 80 probably to next year's draft. So I know it takes a while for these guys to get up here, but as they try to rebuild that farm system, that'll help. And certainly they took a risk a little bit on Smith, and it paid off.
Did they expect Smith to leave? I mean, it just, because it seemed like such an obvious move based on the fact that Atlanta's a winning team and is probably going to be one for a while, and the Giants aren't. Are they expecting to lose more guys simply because the climb for them back to relevance is so daunting?
Yeah, I think they did. And, I mean, that's going to be part of the conversation for Bumgarner, I think. And regardless of what the Giants may or may not offer, I mean, he's competitive. And somebody just asked me on Twitter, I mean, will he pull a Keuchel and sit out until after the draft? I'm like, no, he wants to be their opening day. He wants to be on the mound. He really wants to win. And I know it's a cliche, but I spent a lot of time with Madison during the season just chatting about his future. And he really wants to be somewhere where he can compete. And I think that'll be part of the discussion for him. He's 30 now, so he's going to look at it and maybe go, look, if these guys are still 2 years away, I probably don't want to be a part of that. And I think that was part of the discussion for Smith. I mean, certainly there's a monetary aspect, and it was reported he would have taken that $17.8 million if nobody came with a deal by today. But he really wanted to go somewhere where he could win, and I think he has a really bad taste in his mouth from 2016 in that ninth inning against the Cubs, and just desperately wanted to go back. And he's from Atlanta, so this was perfect for him.
Alex Pavlovich, our 95.7 The Game Giants insider, like all guests, appearing on the Dialpad guest line. Dialpad helps you make smarter calls. Alex, always appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
All right, guys. Take it easy.
I want to dig in a little bit while we're talking Giants with you guys on what in your mind is the right approach to this offseason? Because we talked a ton about the non-baseball implications of Gabe Kapler yesterday, but here we are today. Gabe Kapler's the manager, however you feel about it. And this team has some really interesting decisions on its hands, not even specific decisions, but just in terms of how generally are you going to approach this offseason?
I want to see them kind of reset everything financially. I don't. If you're going to lose Bumgarner, right? Like, if you're going to bring back Bumgarner, I'm okay with that. But if you're going to lose Bumgarner, I don't think you overreact and go try to give $250 million to Gerrit Cole.
So you would not want Gerrit Cole. As a diehard Giants fan, let me rephrase. Everybody wants Gerrit Cole.
Yes.
But as a diehard Giants fan, you don't feel the franchise is in a position where it's worth it to go get Gerrit Cole.
Exactly. And I would like to have some of that financial flexibility, because going out and overspending on a great pitcher, not a good pitcher, a great pitcher right now at that age and that price point, that feels like a 2016, 2015, 2014 move. And that's how they kind of got in this situation.
I tend to agree.
I think Gerrit Cole is what you get when you're close to the top.
Exactly. Right.
But I also think Gerrit Cole is off the list for them anyway, because I don't think he wants to be here.
Exactly.
I don't think he wants to be with a non-contender. I think that's right.
And I think when I asked the Will Smith question, I was trying to gauge Alex on whether they expect that this is going to be a year where they watch people leave as opposed to bring people in. Because I think that's what we're looking at.
I agree.
I don't think this is going to be a dynamic offseason where Farhan is active in acquiring pieces. I think the rebuild only started its start last year, and I think there's still tons more things that have to leave before he starts bringing things in.
Could it be a year where the things he's bringing in are not the big-ticket items, but he is bringing in assets by virtue of things leaving? Is that what you're imagining, that he can actually move on from some of the pieces that are there?
I don't know that he'll be given the choice.
Don't you guys think that they've already been kind of under the cover rebuilding for the last 3 years?
Well, and that's why
no,
I asked.
No, they haven't been rebuilding for the last 3 years. They were kicking the can down
the
road.
Yeah, for 1 year.
Let me finish. In an attempt to extend the glory days and put off the day of reckoning.
Can't you do simultaneously patchwork, which they did at the major league level, while getting all of these top draft picks? Like, look, they have the number two overall pick in their system. They had Helio Ramos the year prior to that.
That's not rebuilding. That's just sucking and doing a better job in the draft than they had previously.
But that's how the Astros got to where they're at, except they didn't do it at the major league level with the money that the Giants had already allocated. But they built their team through the draft. And I know, I understand the payroll being what it is, but you can do both simultaneously. They've sucked on the field at the big league level, and their farm has gotten tremendously better.
Right. But I think what Ray's saying you can't do at the same time is not suck and also rebuild the farm system. They sucked on accident, and they did, to their credit, start at least to rebuild the farm system by virtue of sucking, but they continued to make moves at the major league level that did not help them fail to suck and also probably limited their ability to do things at the minor league level.
But largely because they had nothing at the minor league level that was ready to supplant what they had.
Right.
I mean, Evan Longoria, when they got him, was because they had no third baseman in the pipeline.
And Andrew McCutchen was because they had no outfielders in the pipeline, and they thought, hey, here's two guys who might be able to put us back in contention, and that was probably the wrong way to go about it.
Or just stall till they got a farm system rebuilt.
Perhaps. But I do think now we're further along in that. And so now, I think this is the year, to Ray's point, where let's see Jalen Davis. Let's see Mauricio Dubon. Let's see. You're telling me there's more in the system. I agree with you. But let's see it so we know how real it is. Because otherwise, maybe you can get a draft pick for Brandon Belt. I don't know.
In 1 year, they went from being a top 30. I think they were like 30th overall as far as farm rankings, to middle of the pack. That's a significant jump up in 1 year. And that's all I'm saying.
If you think that matters, and it doesn't. Because ultimately, the only way you can gauge your farm system is, A, how many people it created for you, and in the alternative, how many players you got that helped you at the major league level by trading those guys. And you don't know that based on Baseball America's exhaustive but still with limited evidence,
of course,
picks. I mean, those ratings literally have no bearing at all, except to say, the Giants have some people that we thought they picked at about the place where we thought they would go.
That's better than they had done in the previous exactly. few years, well, which is saying
be.
Something.
That may be, but it's not a metric of any value.
Well, like Christian Arroyo, who we thought was, you know, the next Jeff Kent, like, he's garbage. He's not that good. And they, I don't want Longoria. Believe me, I'm not trying to make the argument for taking on Longoria. But it's not like they're getting rid of Willie Mays Jr. You know what I mean? Like, eh.
You don't know that he's not Willie Mays Jr. until you put him in the major leagues and find out he's not Willie Mays Jr.
Well, we saw him. He batted 176 for the Giants.
Well, Turns out that's my point. When he's in, when guys are in the minor leagues, you don't have an idea about how good they're going to be.
That's fair.
I remember Gary Brown.
Oh, yeah.
Turns out nobody saw him.
Yeah.
Turns out he was more Willie Mays Hayes. Thank you very much. I'll be here all week. That's the end of the segment, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to move on and talk some Niner football coming up because there's some issues here, folks. Yeah, this was supposed to be an easy weekend taking on the Arizona Cardinals, but we don't know about George Kittle's status. We're not sure about Emmanuel Sanders' status, and we don't know who Jimmy Garoppolo is without those guys. We'll dive into it next, plus Brian Baldinger joins us at 4:30. Ray Ratto, Joe Shasky, and me, Matt Kolsky, presented by Fremont Bank. Full-service banking, no compromises.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7, The Game.
We roll on. Matt Kolsky, Ray Ratto, and Joe the Butcher Boy Shasky in today for Damon Bruce. A lot of baseball so far. We're jumping over to the world of the NFL, though, and Thursday sneaks up on you when you have a Monday night football game. But here we are, and neither George Kittle nor Emmanuel Sanders are on the practice field. We've already learned some other guys are definitely going to be out on Sunday. But those two, those are the two that matter the most to me in terms of the potentially available dudes. And I guess the question can be boiled down to this. Well, you know what? Let's start here. What's going on with George Kittle?
He's hurt. He's
finished. You need a microphone to talk.
Then I'm not talking. He's finished.
I mean,
it's clearly a more significant injury than people wanted it to be. It could be next week. It could be the week after. I think at this point, all you know is you don't get him till you get him. And if the 49ers are smart about this, they'll wait till he's as close to 100% as possible. I mean, I don't think you get to be 100% at this stage of the season,
probably
no matter who
not,
you are.
Yeah.
But I think they have to err on the side of caution in ways that would seem almost warrior-esque because he's that important to them.
100%.
So if he is 80% and says, I want to go Sunday, does Emmanuel Sanders' availability play into whether you let him go?
No.
I think his health plays that.
Yeah, it's
so there's a baseline of health that you won't go beneath. But, I mean, what you're saying is as close to 100% as possible. You mean,
yeah, I mean
as close as he'll get before the offseason, or you mean as close as the team can afford to let him get? Because
no,
that's my
I
question.
He's so important that if he goes down again with a setback, you might have kissed him off for the rest of the year. And while I grant you that without knowing the full medical, you know, we're all talking
we're
out
speculating,
our ears.
Yeah.
But if there's a chance that this can get worse, then you have to go, you know what? We need him for 2020 and 2021 and 2022.
True.
Unlike most football players who sadly are, you know, basically treated like tools at Home Depot. As soon as you break the hammer, you go buy another one. He matters to them. And so he gets treated differently, or at least he should. If the 49ers are profligate with his skill by playing him before he's ready, they'll deserve what they get. He won't deserve what he gets, but they'll deserve what they get.
Yeah.
And we know how important he is to Jimmy Garoppolo. I use this analogy because I think that it's 100% right for this particular scenario. When Vernon Davis got hurt in 2007, you know, the year prior, the Niners were looking good. Alex was starting to hum. They had North Turner. Second, third play, game of the year, they play the Steelers. Vernon Davis hurts his knee right over the middle. And Alex Smith's entire trajectory gets completely stunted. A few weeks later, he hurts his shoulder. And we know that's kind of the beginning of the end of Alex Smith with Mike Nolan and that whole thing right there. But what I'm getting at is that it changed fundamentally who Alex Smith was as a quarterback because that was his number one target.
And who was the next best pass catcher on that team.
Oh, my God. It was Isaac Bruce, old okay, man Isaac Bruce.
Really, all you needed to say to make my point was, Artist oh, my
battle.
God. Because it doesn't matter who it was. There wasn't one.
No.
And I think that's the point I want to get to here. And this is by no means disrespect for George Kittle, nor Emmanuel Sanders, nor Vernon Davis for what he was doing at that time with Alex Smith. But the way you said it was, we know how important Kittle is to Garoppolo. And I'm not disputing that. But what I am saying is I don't know that it's Kittle specifically. I think what it is a better than average professional receiving option. Because when Kittle was out and Emmanuel Sanders was in, things looked okay. In fact, they looked pretty good.
For a quarter.
I know. It's all small sample size.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, when Jimmy Garoppolo, first of all, when he first came and there weren't many receiving options to speak of, Marquise Goodwin was his best option. Yeah. He looked pretty darn good.
Lewis Murphy.
He looked pretty darn good.
Yes.
This year, when Kittle and Sanders were on the field for one game, he looked really good.
It's the best we've ever seen him.
Yes.
It's the best we've ever seen him.
And then Kittle was gone, not quite as good, but for a quarter, pretty good against Seattle. And then when Sanders went out, it went basically into the toilet. And I would say the same thing about Alex Smith. It's not that Smith depended on Vernon Davis or Garoppolo depends specifically on Kittle or Sanders, although they're both very good. Kittle really, truly is incredible. It's that the drop-off when you lose those guys is so yes. extreme that it's just too much to ask a quarterback of Jimmy's experience and ability to overcome those losses.
Well, isn't the end game, Ray? Isn't the end game? You got to have everybody humming for the playoffs, whether that's in the wild card round, divisional round. Like, the worst thing they could do is be short-sighted and play the guy to where he gets hurt, and now he's out for the entire year, which is what you were insinuating at the beginning.
No, this is about his entire career.
Yeah.
You're taking that much of a long view on it?
Well,
when you have a player of this caliber.
With an injury of this sort, with a knee.
Yes.
I feel like he'll be okay next year.
Well, you have no idea, and neither do I, and neither does Kolsky.
That's right.
And neither does Albie, as smart as he is.
My
Albie point is
knows.
There are players on each team, or at least on each team that isn't the Jets, that you have to mind as important to your long-term as well as short-term future. And rushing him back, hypothetically, for New Orleans, at the risk of his shorter term, but long-term health, at least for the end of this season. And beyond that, not only does him a disservice, as a cynical matter, it takes away your best player, perhaps for the rest of his career.
Hurts the team, right?
So you have to take that view. You don't. This idea that next man up is somehow charming, it's nonsense. For some guys, it isn't next man up. It's let us know when you're ready.
So what you're saying is take your time on Kittle, force Emmanuel Sanders back into action.
No, I don't know. Maybe. Well, he's a short timer.
That's
and
right.
So if we want to play the cynical argument, yeah, you could do that.
Yeah.
But like I said, Kittle is one of those exceptional guys that you really aren't going to replace anytime soon, either through the draft or the free
course.
Agency, which means you take greater care of him than you do everybody
That's
else.
That's a key point because if something happens to Kittle on Sunday where you lose him forever, it's a disaster for your franchise. If something happens to Emmanuel Sanders on Sunday where you lose him forever, you'll replace him eventually.
Yeah,
but I hate the sound of that, too.
It's awful.
Because there's a level of cynicism in that that reminds me why I hate football.
Because it's so violent.
That's
how the game
is.
Nothing's guaranteed. Well, and I also think, like, to Ray's point about the injury severity and what exactly, if this is a bone bruise, it's one thing. If this is a sprain that could lead to a tear, that's a completely other thing. And
you're right.
And that's where we don't know. So the severity of the injury, the type of injury, you know, what kind of ankle is it? Is it calf? Is it ankle? Like, those things matter to me.
Do you make anything of the weird sort of semantics over whether he's been declared out or not yesterday?
The Niners have been weird with injuries all year, though, haven't they?
Yeah, but that was especially weird. At first, they're not saying anything, and then I think Mayoko said they forgot to ask him about Kittle during their conference call, and then the Arizona reporters asked, and Shanahan said he wasn't going to be available, but then he tried to clarify, I guess, later and say he was just trying to say that they had to be prepared in case he wasn't available, but that they still hadn't answered the question. I mean, I think he's still technically questionable now, but do you make Was that shenanigans or just a couple misspeaks?
I mean, Shanahanigans.
Oh, well played.
Ooh, I like that.
I think...
That's a Marconi.
He might have been... He might have just been tongue-tied, but I also think it speaks to something that's happening across sports, which is to be as vague as possible within the rules mm-hmm. about all injuries. Hockey solved that problem decades ago.
Why do you think it took everyone else so long?
Well, Pat Quinn invented upper body, lower body.
Gambling, though. Isn't it gambling, Ray?
Well, no, but they've wanted more specificity in injury reports, but there, since there's no punishment attached to it, it doesn't matter. I mean, you could just say, you know, Tom Brady, questionable unicorn wound. I mean,
but he's been on the injury list for like 7 years, Tom Brady specifically.
Actually, I think they just took him off. But he's the one guy where I would not doubt unicorn wound.
Yeah, I mean, my point is that you see it in the Warriors all the time. So-and-so will be reevaluated yes. at X time. Not yeah. he'll be out for 6 weeks. And I think the Durant injury taught them a semantic lesson about how not to get caught with your own words. So I think from here on in all sports, on every team, they will be as vague as possible while pretending to adhere to the letter of the rule of that league, if not the spirit.
Well, I know that the specifics of, you know, questionable, doubtful, probable, that is all for gambling. That is to be as accurate as possible and as upfront as possible because the NFL wants to get in bed with gambling. I think, can we all admit that, right?
Well, yeah, but this way predates their desire to get in bed with gambling.
Yeah, but they've been very specific about it.
No, what lately.
Yes.
But before this, they had questionable, doubtful.
I agree, yes.
And the reason why they used that was because the bookmakers in Las Vegas reached out to them and said, hey,
yes.
if you guys aren't at least slightly more transparent with injuries, the chances of games getting fixed will be that much greater. You should do this for your own good,
yes.
as well as ours.
Yeah.
And the NFL sort of heeded that with a nod and a wink. But coaches objected to that. So now I think they're trying to be vaguer while pretending not to be vague.
And wouldn't you also agree, Matt, they're never going to be – like even if Kittle comes back, he'll be 90% or 91% or something. He'll never be 100%. No one is. It's the NFL.
That's where we're at. But yeah. also I still think you – I'm fully with Ray on the part about – this is a special player, and you don't play games with it, which I think brings up a question a couple texters have sent in. But before we do that, we have to say hello to 4 o'clock.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
I don't know if I was feeling it as much yesterday, but it's come back around on me today.
Put that in the Hall of Fame.
It's fantastic. We will take your calls on the Niners as well if you want to jump in, 888-957-9570. Also, a texter said he ripped you a lot yesterday, Butch, but he's liking you better today. So you're growing on the people.
The hate line usually is all over the place. There's a wide variance. I'm like the Jimmy Garoppolo of
it's
the
true,
text
you're
line.
Very polarizing on
one
the text
week,
line.
It's 4 touchdowns, 300 yards, and next week, you know, everybody wants to treat me like a pinata.
So one of the people who asked this question on the text line is Wonderful Niner, who I had the great pleasure of meeting on Monday. I think that was Monday. I can't keep my days straight, but really nice to meet the Wonderful Niner. It was Monday. And his question, which a few people have put forward, is when Kittle got initially injured in Arizona, why did they or the trainer even let him try to go back in that game? Because given what we're now seeing, sure feels like discretion should have been the better part of valor as soon as he got hurt.
I don't think they knew, because you can't really do that with sight
exactly.
right at the moment.
Without an MRI.
How bad it is.
And adrenaline's pumping, right? Guys want to go back in. Yeah,
and well, it's not adrenaline pumping. I mean, the idea of players always want to go back in. Well, shut up. You're not the adult here.
Yeah, but the coaches want to win.
We have a guy with an MD at the end of his name.
Right.
They decide.
Who works for the team.
Well, it works for the team, but the point is... The player is the last one to get a say.
Well, if you're as great as Kittle.
No, I don't care how great he is. I don't care. You're not.
Well, here's what we can say.
If the
doctor had said he's not safe to go, they wouldn't have put him back out there.
No, what I wanted to say in addition to that is if you take him in for an MRI, you are essentially saying we think it's bad enough mm-hmm. that we're going to start going to outside information. Because usually if a guy gets hurt and goes back in the game, they haven't taken him in to give him the full once over. I think once you take him in, you have a better sense that he shouldn't play anymore. I think they thought he might be able to go. And sometimes you're right, sometimes you're wrong, because in football, injuries tend to get worse, not better.
Agreed. And we've seen this happen before. This is nothing new. I remember Jerry Rice coming off the torn ACL the year he tore it, first game of the year against Tampa Bay, and then he came back, I think it was week 12, week 13, caught a touchdown pass in the end zone, and re-tore it. Remember that one, Ray?
Yeah.
We don't have to go that far back to think Jerry about Rice. People who may have come back too early from an injury and ended up with a worse injury.
Oh, there's plenty of them. Where are you going with this?
I don't know. Kevin Durant,
maybe?
I don't think I'm going anywhere. I'm just saying we don't have to go as far back as Jerry Rice.
No, you were, say the words.
Yeah.
It's safe today.
Of course. That's what we're talking about. It doesn't matter that Ray and you and I all believe Kevin Durant took his own health in his own hands. They did everything they could to be safe medically.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.